Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to 2018. This is Carol Werlius with the Business Trust Call, and I have my friend Judy helping me out today, and she has done so well in the last few months. We are here, obviously, to talk about business trusts. We are not gurus or attorneys or CPAs. I don't sell currency, not pumpers, not anything like that. Just to talk to you about business trusts. Because my partner, Jim, and I think this is the most efficient way to handle whatever asset we are likely to see as a result of this RV. So with that being said, good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Carol, and everybody else on the call. So why don't we start off with our basic, what is a business trust?
Okay, you know, we talk about this all the time, almost always first.
Right.
And I try to change up the language a little bit so everybody doesn't
get
a recording. So the business trust is also known as a contract business trust, a common law trust, or Massachusetts trust. And the use of the term trust can be misunderstood in that trusts are typically a larger family of trust instruments. A better term for the business trust that we use will be unincorporated, non-associated business or family organization, sometimes called a UBO. So it's got a lot of history, it's got a lot of names, but for ease of discussion, we just typically call it a trust or a business trust. And our common law contract business trusts are created under the common law of contracts and do not depend upon any statute for their creation. That's why, for the most part, you do not have to register these trusts in any state unless you're actively running a business, like here in Washington. Nevada did a few years ago decide that you had to register your business trust, which is why we no longer send people to Nevada. But for the most part, they are totally outside of any statutory restrictions.
Okay. Well, I recently, and it actually it's the first time I've heard this, that a business trust is no longer valid. Why are we still selling them if that's the case, or is that just not true?
It's not true. I mean, I've heard that comment also. Some clients have come back because, you know, I took this to my attorney, and he said these aren't valid anymore. They used to use these a long time ago, but they don't anymore. Well, that typically comes from attorneys who are not familiar with common law, as common law is no longer taught in our schools and universities. Attorneys today are familiar with statutory trusts because that's what they do, is statutory law. The business trust is still valid, easy to implement, and offers an unparalleled level of protection, which is why we feel it's such a good idea for people that hold foreign currency.
Okay. So, Carol, how do we get our currency into a business trust? How do we get the, like, I have my, for, you know, my paper money. How do I actually get it in there?
A lot of people ask me that. I'll prepare their trust for them, and I'll send it to them, and then they'll call me or email me. Well, how do I actually get my currency in there? When you do your initial exchange with your creator,
right?
You exchange your currency with the creator, who then makes it the corpus or the principal body of the business trust. So,
I see.
If you read the preamble of the trust, it explains it very, very well. It is a contract, so you are exchanging your currency with the creator, who is the initiator of the contract. He's putting the currency into the trust and giving you back 100 gift certificate units, which is evidence of the exchange and fair consideration.
Awesome. Okay, I understand that now.
And, you know, people have wondered about the creator. Well, who the heck is this? You know, why do I need somebody else in my trust? You do need somebody else to initiate the trust. It's typically a disinterested third party. But the last thing he does after taking your exchange is he then appoints a suitable person as trustee, usually yourself, and then exits the contract, having no further business with the business trust whatsoever. So you're back to, okay, it's just you and your trust.
Okay. So Once that's all done, the creator's in and then out again, who has control of the business trust?
Well, the business trust, like most trustees, is managed by one or more trustees. The beauty of the business trust that we use, you can become the trustee of your own business trust. The method by which the business trust is created allows for the appointment of the original investor exchanger as trustee. So you have nobody between you and your money. It's the business trust. You're the trustee. You're in total control. There's no outside manager. There's no protector or whatever some of these other people call them. It's just you and your spouse if you have one. And some people have questioned that. You know, how is it that you can be the exchanger and the trustee?
Right.
And the Supreme Court has held that in law, the investor exchanger and the trustee are to be treated as two separate persons, even though they may be the same physical. You're wearing two hats. You're wearing one hat as the investor and another hat as the trustee. So it's been upheld by the Supreme Court for years.
Okay, awesome. So who owns the assets of the business trust?
The business trust owns the assets in fee simple, meaning the whole title, both legal and equitable, to the entire trust estate shall be vested in the trustees. This means the property that was once yours is now protected from personal liabilities, probate, and estate taxes.
So, Carol, I'm just curious now, and I know you've spoken about this in the past, but why can't I just exchange in my own name and my own bank account?
Because you're putting yourself at risk. You're putting your name out there and just you're leaving too many holes open. By exchanging into a properly crafted business trust, you protect your privacy and anonymity, and you have successfully shielded those assets from liability and lawsuits because you don't own them. The use of a business trust significantly reduces the chances of an IRS audit. And the assets of the business trust are forever free from probate and estate tax. Now, in one of the examples that we've talked about, okay, let's say we do RV and you're at the bank and, you know, you've just done your exchange and you come out probably a multimillionaire.
Right.
And you are so overwhelmed, you have a stroke or you have a heart attack and die. So what happens to all that money? Your family will never see it. If you didn't have a properly crafted vehicle for it, even a halfway decent will, your family will never see it because it will be tied up in the courts for forever.
Right.
In that same scenario, and, you know, God forbid any of us have a heart attack and die after our exchange, we have already provided for a logical succession. So the currency is in your business trust. If something happens to you and or your spouse, you have already appointed the successor trustee to take over. So it gives, as I say, for a logical succession to who owns it. And it doesn't matter if you die because somebody else will take care of it. So it's never going to get caught up in probate and estate tax and that kind of stuff. It's exchanging in your own name is just not a good idea. Use trust.
Okay. So, Carol, how do I use the business trust? How do I get money out of it for myself and for those that I want to help?
This is probably the biggest question I get from a lot of people.
Right.
You know, we've provided instruction with the business trust. As most of you know, you get your little PDF disc. Many people are still confused. Living out of your business trust is really not that difficult. And, of course, the big question is, how do I get money out of my business trust?
Right.
There are actually four different ways. And, you know, the first way is to pay yourself a modest salary as trustee. You know, this should be enough to cover your everyday needs, groceries, utilities, gasoline, medical bills, et cetera. The second way is to declare and pay a distribution to the trust certificate holders. In either case, the money is taxable income to you. And you do want to pay some taxes. I mean, you probably want to take some money this way and pay a minimal amount of tax. I mean, my husband
right.
and I have already planned to do that.
Or just right.
pay a salary and pay, you know, X amount of taxes. just because you don't want to fall off the radar altogether.
Exactly.
Another question is, well, how do I pay off my house, or how do I purchase new property? So, you know, you could just go ahead and take the money and buy a new house. Well, that's not a good idea, because number one, the money you take is taxable to you. And you're probably going to still have the house in your own name. Also not a good idea. You're going to end up owning your own property. You know, it's not a good idea if you're trying to keep a low profile. A better option is to borrow money from the trust. So really to obtain a mortgage from the trust, secured by a promissory note, and put the house into a real estate trust. And this would be optimal for larger expenses. It's not a taxable event. You can use the same method to purchase new vehicles, etc. Does anybody have any questions about that?
I have one, but I'm gonna go in line. I'll get at the back of the line.
Okay. All right. Let's see if anybody's here. Yes, we do. Hang on. Because I know this is a subject for a lot of people. So all I hear, wireless caller, area code 914.
Hi. Is that me?
I don't know. That's you.
Oh, okay. Hi, Carol. It's Regina. So I have a question. I missed some of this stuff in the beginning because I don't know, there was some background noise. So what you were talking about is getting the business trust in the house in the business trust name. So why can't we purchase it as a trustee or an executor and just put it under the trustee name immediately?
Well, you're not going to put it under the trustee name, and I would not.
Well, under the business trust name.
Okay. I would not recommend putting your house into the same trust as your mother lode, as we like to call it, where all the money is. But,
okay.
So borrow the money from your mother lode.
Okay, from the business trust, from the primary one.
Right. Buy the house in the name of a new trust. So when the house is titled, it will be titled in the name of that trust. And then you're going to draw a mortgage or promissory note or anything so you can have a paper trail that the trustee borrowed the money from the trust to pay for the house, so that it's not a taxable event to you.
Okay, and you mentioned something that there was a PDF file. What did you mean on that? I didn't quite catch that.
When I send out your trust, I send out a CD, and it's got PDF instructions on it. There's several books. One of them is called Book 4, How to Operate Your Trust. Did you not get that, Regina?
I don't think so.
Let me write myself a little note.
I don't think we got any of the PDF files.
Okay. Hang on. I'm writing myself a note.
You know, I'm Cecilia's daughter.
Yeah. I'll look
okay.
into them. Okay.
Okay.
That's a really good question because I know a lot of people at the sticking point. How do I do anything with my house? But it's not really that difficult. It sounds difficult, but it is the best way to protect your mother load and protect yourself and reduce your tax impact as well.
Okay. So we'd have one primary trust and then which obviously we would keep our initial investment for the currency. And then we would have different trusts. And I remember when we all talked about this, different trust accounts. I guess one for charity, one for home, boat, car, just stuff like that. Now, are they set up the same way?
Yes.
They are set up the same way. Are they linked? They're not linked in any way.
Some trust companies, they link their trust or their sub-trust or whatever. Jim and I and some other people have discussed this at length, and it just makes more sense to keep everything as isolated and insulated as possible.
Okay, so separate, not really kind of
Yeah.
Some
together. Of the verbiage is different. It's basically the business trust with additional verbiage for whatever it is.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Tamara, how are you?
Hello.
Hi, Tamara.
Hey, thank you. Carol, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. It's crazy. My name is actually Tamara, but everybody in the States calls me Tamara, so it's like, oh, yeah, that's me. Okay.
That's me.
I'll have to remember that.
No, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. I actually do have a question, but I'm thinking maybe you will answer it later on in the call, or should I try to ask it now and then just wait, you know, if you're going to go over it and answer it later?
Okay. All right. So what's the question?
Okay. So the question is, it's regarding the exchange. You know, I purchased a fair amount of Zims, and I have, you know, the abstract trust that you've provided me with. So I'm going to go down to the exchange with the abstract trust. My question is that I suppose, you know, I guess regarding FDIC rules, the FDIC does not insure finances over a certain limit. For example, I think it's $250,000. If I'm wanting to put, Zims that exceed that amount in a trust, in, you know, a bank account, I'm concerned that, you know, part of the money would not be insured or not covered through the FDIC. So if they offer me like a skeleton trust, I mean, I'm wondering, how do I do this for the initial trust, just to park the money until I can go somewhere, you know, to a wealth manager and get things, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to use a SIDARS to distribute my money in different banking accounts, you know. How do you do that with one trust initially when you're just, you know, at the beginning of the exchange? Does that make sense?
That is an excellent question, not one I've really looked into. However, we have this kind of wealth, we're going to need to purchase additional insurance on those accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think depending on the level of your assets under management at the bank, they will either mm-hmm. offer it to you and they will pay for it, or you will have to pay for it on your own. But additional insurance is a really good idea.
Okay.
Like you said, FDIC doesn't cover a whole lot. And
right.
Another thing you might want to think about, and you could look this up online, is CDARS.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Certificates of deposit spread out through different banks, but you mm-hmm. only have one major account to deal with, as I recall.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to use.
Yeah, I think it's mm-hmm. a really good idea.
Yeah, but for the initial exchange, because I'm just wondering, you know, just initially parking the money until I can go to a wealth manager, because I have not, you know, gone to a wealth manager yet. I've only investigated them because, you know, they're not going to believe that you're going to come into sudden wealth like that.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, you're ridiculous, seriously. But just that initial park, I mean, I had thought, you know, maybe I'll ask the bank at the exchange, could you open, you know, like 10 accounts for me initially, and I have one trust, but could you create 9 skeleton trusts until I can get back with to you in like 4 days with, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would have to call you and bombard you and say, can I have about 50,000 other trusts? I don't know. You know, I was just trying to think, how is this going to work, you know? Yeah.
If you have that much, there will be a wealth advisor at the bank. You're not going to have to look for anybody. And I'm sure they can help you with that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's awesome. But just know, I mean, after I get this initial, you know, after we get the initial exchange squared away, that we'll be calling you, myself, my cousin, and my other friend will be calling you.
Okay, I look forward to it. All right.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. We even wanted to know, could we even come and visit you? I mean, just fly out to Colorado, or I can't remember where you're at. But
I'm in Washington.
In Washington? Really?
Yeah.
In which Washington, D.C. or the state?
Oh, no, I'm in the Seattle area.
Aha, you're on the other side of the world for me.
Yes.
Okay, because we were even thinking about, you know, just flying out and sitting down and setting up our structures with you or something, but we'll figure that out. Just wanted to let you know.
Okay, appreciate that. You know, some people have asked me if I'm going to be having classes or anything like that. And I really don't have that on my agenda, but that doesn't mean that if enough people are interested, we can't put something together like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're so much interested in a class because the information that you send is pretty straightforward and easy to understand. But we would just want to set up, you know, just to come to you and set up, like, you know, 10 trusts that we're going to go and assign to other things. Obviously, we could do that online, the whole thing, but, you know, it just, we'll figure it out. But we'd bounce the possibility of flying out just to do that and get it done and then carry on. So, okay.
Okay, we'll have to see how that works out.
Okay, okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have another caller here. Let's see. Area code 818, Southern California.
Hi, Carol. It's Rose. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, too. Rose, how are you doing, dear?
I'm good. I'm still here in Vegas.
Oh, good for you.
So anyway, my question is this. Going back to how to get money out of the trust, and you were mentioning about borrowing money. So personally, I will be the one to borrow the money from the trust, right?
Yes.
And then I will buy a house and then put it in another trust. And so which means that...
You're going to buy the house in the name of another trust.
Buy the house in another trust.
Yes.
But it will be the money that I borrowed.
Yes.
Personally. So which means that I will be the one personally to be paying the mortgage.
Yes.
Or I will be using, I will be having two hats as a trustee and a personal person. Or how will I be able to pay the mortgage amount?
Well, you could have it's a long-term promissory note with a balloon payment, as long as you make interest payments. You don't have to pay the trust back $6,000 a month or whatever. You can do it at a 2% interest rate. And again, this is, as I said, I'm sure we're all going to be meeting wealth advisors at our exchange, and they can help us out with these kind of promissory notes and things like that, how to make it easy so you're not making these exorbitant payments. You could put it all in a balloon note at minimal interest, and it'll be fine.
Oh, I see. But then what I'm trying to say, when you have to pay the mortgage, it will be you personally, or it's not the trust who is paying it?
It all depends how you set it up. I mean, a lot of people have thought about, okay, I'm going to buy this house. I'm going to borrow the money from Mother Lode Trust. I'm going to buy this house over here. Somehow I have to pay back the loan. So how about we're going to keep my own profile as low as possible. We'll just get a rental agreement. I'm going to rent the new house at, you know, rates that are not stupid, not a dollar a year, but you're going to rent the new house for what your utilities cost you, your taxes, your insurance, and whatever it would normally cost to live somewhere. So just even $2,000. So you can do a rental agreement. You personally are going to pay the money that you make from the rental agreement is what's going to pay off the loan to the Mother Lode Trust.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. Okay. I'm a little bit confused because, you know, I will be personally borrowing the money from the money's trust, and then I'm going to buy a house. And then, of course, I have to pay the mortgage. So I will be personally paying it in my name.
Yes.
It's not the trust who is going to pay it,
right.
Although because I borrowed the money.
Right. But you know what? A lot of people do ask about this, and it is kind of confusing. You know, I rattle it off at the top of my head because I've said it for so often.
Right.
But I think what I will do is write up something like this about methods you can use to borrow money to purchase a house. And if nobody minds, I'll just send it out to everybody.
Well, that's a great idea.
That's a very good idea. At least, step by step is the procedure so that we can follow through, Carol.
I will do my best.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Carol.
Carol and Rose, let me just interject a little thought because I think I know where she's coming from. The Mother Lode's going to set up a new trust for Rose to buy her house. The trust will buy the house and own the house. The trust, then the mortgage payments need to be made. But won't she be, as the trustee on the bank account, won't she be making the mortgage payments as a trustee of her trust? She won't be making them personally, right?
She could be making them as a trustee of the second trust, the one that owns the house.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. That's the one that would protect her the most, correct?
Yeah. I think that's a better avenue how to do that. And that the thing is that, so it is the initial trust that's going to set a new trust.
Yes.
Oh,
not, they're not connected, but the initial trust is going to fund the second trust through loan, yes. And I'll spell all that out. I'll write it all out.
Yeah, and then how to fund it, you can just transfer the money from the initial to the second trust if there is another second trust?
Depending how you write it up, yes, that's the way it's going to be done.
Say it again, Carol.
Depending on how it's written up, yes, that is the way it's going to be done. The first trust can either lend money to a second trust or can invest in the second trust directly.
Now, how is the money going to go from the first trust, the mother load, into Elvis? Is there a bank account attached to it to do that with?
Yeah. Let's just say, okay, you've got your mother load and then you've got your ABC trust. So ABC trust at this point doesn't have anything in it, right? The mother load has all the money.
Correct.
Okay.
So we can do this a couple of ways. We can originally, especially for those of you that have already set up secondary trusts,
right,
use a pass-through account from your mother load to put some money into this the secondary trust. You're going to use a pass-through. But let's say you haven't set them up yet. You are going to have the mother load trust actually invest. They're going to be the investor into the second trust. So the mother load trust will be connected to the secondary trust, but only as an investor. You're still going to be the trustee.
Investor / lender? Is that accurate?
The term is investor exchanger.
Okay, got it.
When you put your currency into the trust to begin with, you're exchanging it into the trust. And I don't like to use that term only because it confuses people as far as the RV exchange.
Exactly.
So that's why it's an investor exchanger instead. So the first one is going to invest money at that point into the second trust. So the first trust would be, mother load trust would be the certificate holder for the second trust, but you would be the trustee.
Excellent.
Are you talking about the passing through account?
I'm sorry?
Is that, because I remember in one of our calls I think you made mention about passing through account.
It's called a pass through account. So let's say you've already set up some other trusts and you're at your RV and you're exchanging money and it's all going to go into this mother load trust account. And then you're going to say, I want to set up some pass through accounts so I could pass them through to other entities. You want to be able to do it, obviously, so it's not a taxable event. So if you do it with a pass-through account, it would not be a taxable event.
And so are we going to set that up in the bank?
Yes.
So they call that the pass-through account.
Yes.
So from the initial trust, if there is another trust, you can transfer some money from the initial mother load to the second trust if you have done a second trust.
Yes.
Perfect. Excellent.
So that is, it's not the currency, but it's already exchanged. It's already the money.
That's correct, yes. It's already the money.
And that's not taxable.
Correct. It's not a taxable event.
I think that is even easier, I guess, you know. So that means we have to set up another trust so that in the event of, of the exchange, from the mother load trust, we can set up a trust, a pass-through account, so that we can transfer some of the funds from the initial trust to the second trust.
Correct.
And there is no IRS reporting in that manner?
No, because it's all the same money. So it's not, you're not creating new money like you would be in another situation, but it's not borrowing, but you're just passing it through, taking it from the left hand and putting it in the right hand. That's all.
Transferring.
Okay. But it is just using a check, maybe just a withdrawal from the initial mother load
yeah,
to
your,
the second
trust. Your wealth
trust.
Manager can help you with that, Rose. I mean, I don't know. Okay. I don't know the mechanics of it, but your wealth manager can help.
Bankers will help us.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Carol. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Area code 914 again. Okay.
Hi, it's me again. Hi. You know, I was listening to all the questions. I did go to the bank regarding opening up the business trust, which we already have, and they had said to me that I should get checks. And I said, oh, and they told me how much they were, and I kind of laughed. It was like a few hundred dollars, but I said, all right, you know, obviously if we're going to have this enormous exuberant amount of money, then whatever, $200-$300, whatever, for checks will be fine. I also asked them, how do I take money out of my account? She says, well, meaning the business trust or the mother load account. She says, well, it's very easy. So, you know, I think we're looking at it as it's such a hard task, I guess, because it's new to most of us. And she said you just fill out a check, like if you were taking money out of your own checking account or taking money out of your own savings account, you could write a check. So now I'm presuming from what we just talked about, right, we would take money from the mother load or the primary business trust account, and we would transfer it into a pass-through account. Now, I have a question for you. Let's say we have a pass-through account, and obviously since we are custodians or trustees, I'm not sure of the proper terminology. So, Carol, as you know, it's me and my mom. So, obviously, since we are both on the account, either one of us can go and transfer money.
Right.
My question is, let's say we want to, because I know there was talk from the very beginning, and I apologize to anybody if I'm going to confuse the mix at the moment. It was talked about that our primary trust account that we're presently with should be moved at some point. It shouldn't be kept where it is. Now, do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Okay. The reason I suggest initially, if you open a bank account, is not to get checks, is because I feel, and I read this, that you're going to want to change account numbers when you're at the bank for your exchange. You may have an existing account you've had for whatever, but when you actually do your money exchange, you probably want to put it into a new account number.
Yeah,
exactly.
You
know, same bank, same...
Even if it's with the same bank?
Same bank, same trust, same every, a new account number to further shield your anonymity and your privacy. So why would you need to have checks now when you don't have...
Well, no, I didn't do checks.
Okay. Well,
and they
okay.
said it was very easy if I wanted to withdraw money. And I will tell you, I had a car accident, so I had some money, and I was accruing finance charges at the bank every month.
Yeah.
And rather than have him reverse it, I just put in a minimal balance. So I said, well, this is good. God forbid anything happens to me, God forbid,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, my mother would be able to go take the money out.
Right.
So I said, can I come in and take money out? She says, yeah, just sign a withdrawal slip. And you could take money out. So I was like, okay, that's easy. So I didn't...
You have to document it in your trust. If you take money out in your own name, that is going to be a taxable event to you.
Say that again?
If you take money out in your own name, it's going to be a taxable event to you because it will be income. But, you know, back to the scenario of borrowing money to buy a house, borrowing money to buy a car... That's a loan. It's not a taxable event. I mean, I think you should, you know, absolutely take a salary, take money when you need it, just remember it is a taxable event.
But it's not taxable that I took my own personal gain from the lawsuit and I put it into the account. I only put some in, just not to accrue finance charges. I would have to document that was my personal money.
Yeah.
Only to hold the account. Okay, so we need to keep some kind of, I guess, actually record keeping for what we did and when.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, you can even write that as a loan from you personally to your trust to keep the account open.
Okay.
So that way you could take it back out, and it wouldn't be taxable.
Okay, and as long as it's written in the trust book, where would it be written, in a private notebook?
Yeah, that's in it. Write a minute. Just write a minute.
I'm sorry?
Just write a minute documenting your actions.
Got it. Okay. Okay, I think this is becoming easier and easier. Oh, so my other question to what that lovely lady was talking about. So with the pass-through account, so the initial business trust account, so we talked about maybe, as we just said, getting another account number. So with the pass-through account and having the new account number, do you know how what people, and this is would be the scenario that I would be talking about, when people purchase a car, sometimes they open up a private bank account or checking account and just have their monthly lease payments withdrawn. So under that concept, let's say we had one of our pass-through accounts, but we opened up one of those sub-trust accounts, and let's just say for argument's sake, we're releasing a car, okay? Or let's say we bought a house, because that's what she was talking about. So I got a little confused on why are we paying it back with an interest. If there isn't a certain amount of money, could we just open up a separate account and just have that money taken out by the lender? I mean, everything is so automated nowadays. So would it be, and believe me, I still like to lick and stick my envelopes. I don't believe so much in the automation part. But could we just have it so that it would, that there would be, let's say we bought a house for $2 million, and we put $2 million in this savings account or checking account, and every month it would withdraw whatever it needed for the mortgage. What is the purpose of, one, can we do that? And is that safe? And then the second question would be, why couldn't we just pay the whole thing off under the business trust?
Okay, let's go back to the.
Sorry.
So you're buying this house for $2 million.
So right.
$2 million doesn't stay with you. You borrowed the money to buy the house. $2 million goes to whoever sold you the house, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Right, we'd have the mortgage to pay.
Right, so you're talking about another account with which to pay back the mortgage to the mother loan trust, but how is that account funded?
We would take it right out of the primary account.
But then you're...
If we're going to pay the buyer, we just take the money out of the account from the business trust, is actually buying it, and pays the people, and then we hold...
Pay the seller. How do you...
Right, pay the seller. Sorry, I'm the buyer.
How do you then pay the mortgage back to the mother loan trust? If the $2 million is gone, and you've got...
Do we have to pay it back? It's our money.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Did I get lost somewhere on this?
I love it. You're so cute. You're so cute because you get it, but you understand it, but you don't get that you've gotten it.
So
I love it.
Like, listen, I get $1 million. I'm buying you all a car. Let's go shopping. I mean, come on.
Thank you, darling. I'll send you my address.
Plan that. So. The thing is, if you just take the money and don't ever pay it back, the IRS considers that a gift, and then it would be taxable income to you.
Oh, that's the tricky part. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the deal. You write up a note, promissory note, let's say a balloon note, a 20-year balloon note, and all you have to make is interest payments, 2% a year. Okay? So
we can make any amount of interest that we see fit, or?
Yeah, 2% is what the government pays us on stuff. It should be good enough. If it's good enough for them, it should be good enough for us.
Okay, so we would pay that 2% back to the business trust. Now, where did that 2% come from? It's actually coming out of the trust again pay?
No, that is actually coming out of your pocket. But don't forget, the trust is paying you something.
Right, because we're taking a salary.
Yes, you're taking a salary. So with that salary, your salary should be big enough to include that 2% interest payment.
Okay.
I mean, there's certain things that we cannot get around. And this, of course, you know, we're talking about the tax laws as we know them now.
Okay.
So a lot of that, from what I'm reading, from what all of us are reading, I'm sure, are quite likely to change.
Okay. Yeah. And it would depend on where the business trust is open or where we're presently living. Like, do I need to find some kind of tax accountant lawyer that lives in the New York area where I reside?
Where you are the trustee, so wherever it's comfortable for you.
Okay.
And you could work with somebody in Arizona. We have telephones, we have email, et cetera, et cetera. You don't necessarily have to see somebody in person.
Okay, so if I said, I don't know if you're able to help us with this. So if I get a, so what am I looking for, a tax accountant who does business trust?
Yeah, initially, because you are, I'm sure, going to make acquaintance with a wealth advisor at the bank. And I mean, I think it was just you that said, you know, it was Tamara, there's no point in talking to a wealth advisor now because they'll think you're crazy. But
yes, I can definitely say that. I've spoken to a few guys, and they kind of do. You know, I used to work for the market, so I know how these guys work. They're all a little nutty, but.
Okay, there you go. So, but the point is, you're going to know people. You're going to have this wealth advisor on your side and tell them, look, this is what I want to do, the blah, blah, blah. Do you have a CPA that I could go to? Or could you recommend a few CPAs? And you don't have to stick with the same guy that you meet at the bank. You this initial wealth advisor might be a jerk, or you just don't hit it off personally. I mean, you can find anybody you want at any time, and at that time you will have some money when you talk to somebody, and it will be worth your time and theirs. So it's not as if we all have to learn how to write out mortgage agreements, because we don't. It's really pretty straightforward. It's straightforward to do, more difficult to explain.
Okay. Well, no, I have a mortgage guy already who knows about all the laws on mortgages, and he knows how to write everything out.
Oh, there you go.
So, and he's part of this blessing. I bought him a Christmas present, and I bought him Zim.
Oh, great.
So, okay. Yeah.
You're working with somebody that is familiar with what you've got.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and he works with an agency out of Long Island. But he's very knowledgeable. He could probably own the company. He's so smart.
Oh, wow.
But he had a stroke, so he's been on his feet the past few years and working steadily, and God's really been blessing him. So, okay, so it would be a wealth manager, CPA.
Yeah, and you're gonna need those people, like I said, I don't know about taxes, so I can't say tax attorney. Hopefully we won't have an issue with taxes. But, you know, you will find the professionals that you need.
Okay. Okay, I just want to make sure that I know what I'm looking for, what I need at the time that I need, you know, because we'll be so frantic, you know, if someone tries to sell me bananas, I'll be like, okay, I'll buy them now.
I'll even get the green ones.
I like the green ones.
We'll be so excited we won't even be able to spell our names.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, the funny part, if someone tries to sell me green bananas, even though I know they're plantains, I may just buy them anyway, hoping that they're going to turn yellow, and they're not. I don't want to have that kind of scenario. It is only bananas, but...
Oh, well, thank you, Regina. Does that answer some of your questions?
Yes. No. You're making me feel much more comfortable on what I'm doing. I mean, even though orange is a great color, I really don't want to wear orange.
Exactly.
Or vertical stripes, right?
And if I wanted to put vertical, especially if they're going in the wrong direction. So if I wanted to take the rest of my own money, it's not that I have that much, but, you know, the little fazools that I have, if I wanted to take them and put the rest into the business trust, I can do that.
You can, but I really wouldn't. I just keep it separate. It's your own mad money. I wouldn't put it into that same account.
Okay. Okay, so just enough to hold the account open. So it's kind of like a loan.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, Ralph, area code 757.
Yes, good afternoon or good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Ralph. I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, I'm doing fine. I got a couple questions to ask you. Right?
Okay.
As a trustee of a business trust, you are actually an employer of that entity. Your trust is actually an employer to you because you're going to be doing all, as a trustee, doing all the trust business, running around and everything like that, right?
Right. And, you're going to pay yourself a salary, yes.
Yes, okay. Can that trust provide, as an employee of that trust, can that trust provide for you life and health insurance?
Yes. You just have to write up a minute for it, and you can do that. Absolutely. My husband and I are going to do the same thing.
Okay. All right. The other question I have is that every trust we create, off of the mother lode trust for the houses, cars, all the expenses, items, okay, we have to borrow money from the mother lode trust for every trust? Right? Every other trust we create, see, like we create 10 other trusts. So the 10 other, the mother of the trust is going to lend money to the 10 other trusts in succession. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, depending on how you set it all up. Again, there's different ways to go, but essentially, yes.
All right. And can every individual trust have its own bank account so the mother load trust could put the money straight into that particular trust bank account?
Yes, and every single trust should have its own bank account.
Okay. Another question I have for you, right? The trust that I have created, how can I change that into a family trust?
What do you mean by a family trust?
My last name, family trust. Can I do that with that trust I have? Or I have to create another trust?
You would have to create another trust, but that when by doing that,
mm-hmm.
you were destroying your anonymity.
Oh, well, for you. Okay.
So you got the Black Family Trust,
uh-huh.
and everybody knows it's your trust, right? So I would not recommend that.
Oh, you wouldn't recommend that? Okay. So how would I keep this just in my family?
You control that by your successor trustees and bloodline and stuff like that, and we'll talk about that a little later.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Another thing. When can I call? When is the good time I can call you? But I want to ask you something off this air.
I'm usually available between 9 and 5 Pacific time.
7 days a week or Monday to Friday?
Monday through Saturday.
Monday through Saturday. Okay, I'll give you a call.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's see. Area code 801, Utah.
Hi, this is Mike Zimmerman.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
That's a long story.
Okay.
Anyway, I was just wondering, do we have to write minutes up every single year, even though we didn't do anything?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I suggest now, a lot of people have had trust for several years, and I think you should write 1 minute at the end of every year saying, at the end of the year meeting of the Board of Trustees, it was noted that the trust transacted no business this year, or the trustee purchased additional currency on behalf of the trust. But while we're doing nothing, one a year is fine. When you start doing things and spending considerable amounts of money, those things you need to document.
Yeah, I understand. But it's past the end of the year, so what date should I put on it?
Oh, you could write it today and just say it, you know. But they had, there was had no... a meeting at the end of December. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's all I had to ask.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Okay.
Okay, area code 928. Oh, that's Arizona.
Well, it's not, Carol. It's Sharon in Washington.
Oh, okay. See, you just messed me up with that area code. How are you, Sharon?
I haven't given up my Arizona cell phone. Anyway, I'm trying to figure this thing out, and for some reason it just isn't going into my head. But I have been putting some questions down that I wanted to try to figure out. First of all, for second special needs trust, I have a grandson that doesn't have a clue that there's any funds possibly coming, and he has seizures and couldn't handle it. Do I have to have his personal info to even set this up to get in a bank account for it? What do I have to do to put some sort of a trust in place for him?
Well, you could just do a separate trust. He doesn't even have to be on it. I mean, you're still going to be the trustee and administer it.
So it would be my bank account and the trust. This is what I'm trying to figure out. If I've got, because I have two people like this, and the money's, the dinar is here at my place, and I'm going to have to go to the bank. But if I set up the trust for them, then does the bank account be in their name? I don't know.
The bank account would be in the name of the trust. So let's say he's got a recurring medical expense, right? And instead of coming out of his personal account or your personal account, you're going to direct that provider to take automatic payments out of XYZ Med Trust or whatever you want to call it. And they can take their payments out of that. Anything else you have to purchase for him, let's say you have to rent an oxygen machine, that trust will pay for all that.
Okay, so now if I go to the bank, and we're talking about these pass-through trusts, will somebody at the bank know what a BTO trust is? Do I have to take my book along and say, here's all the details, how it works, until I get this sorted out? I flat out am at a loss.
No, I suggest that when we go for our exchange, that you only take in the abstract of trust, which is 2 or 3 pages, and your EIN letter. It's not a bad idea to put your trust binder in a briefcase and have it, but I certainly would not offer it because it's none of their business. It's a private document. There's enough information on the abstract of trust to open an account. And to my knowledge, they've never needed anything else. I mean, I've opened trust accounts all over Western Washington and in Arizona and California. And that's all I've ever needed is the abstract.
So if I went in and put it all in this motherlode trust, but I've got several special needs trusts to open up and so on, for the moment, the bank would know what these pass-through trusts are and what's going to happen?
Yeah, you're just going to say, I need to set aside, and I'm not, how should I put this? I'm not that skilled in that arena myself as far as pass-through trusts, but say, okay, Mr. Banker, here's all the money in this big trust. I've got other trusts coming. I want to set aside $1 million in a pass-through account so I can fund these other trusts when they are completed. And they shouldn't have a problem with that, whatever the amount is. That should be fine.
So the currency that I have here, that one of them is they actually purchased, the other don't have a clue that it's going to happen, but I do want to meet their expenses because of their physical problems, that this would still be my trust, and this is just the best way to get the money back to them is by putting it in a trust with their name, but I still control, but the money's still in my account. Is that what we're saying?
No, the money is going to be in a if it's a separate trust, it's a separate trust account, okay?
Okay.
So let's say your nephew's name is Bob. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So Bob has ongoing needs. So you've got the Bob Med Trust, just for lack of a better name. Good. Like I said, you're going to set it up with the provider if he gets anything on a regular basis. Okay, here's a debit card number for this account. Take your payments out of this. Or you may, from time to time, need to rent him some equipment, say like an oxygen machine. So you're going to use that debit card or use that checking account to pay for that oxygen machine. If you just have to go down to local Walmart and buy him some adult diapers, you're going to use that debit card.
But that debit card or that bank account, I don't have to have his Social Security and information because he doesn't even know about it.
No. You are the trustee, but it's for his benefit. But you're still the trustee.
Okay. I think I'm beginning to figure this out. And the bank will understand if, like, I've enough about these BTO trusts that they'll be knowledgeable enough to help us out when we... I mean, no sense talking to them now, of course.
I don't anticipate any problems with banks in this in these particular trusts. I don't.
Okay, that was my... So if I go in and ask the financial advisor, I don't have to try to hope that I find one that's familiar with this type of trust.
No. No, you should be fine.
Okay. So the simplest thing to do to get money into these other three people who are sitting at my house and I got to get it to them, I can't give it to them because giving it, that's not an option.
No.
Tax-wise.
It's a taxable event and it's going to mess up whatever benefits they have.
So I just open up the trust, and then if they, one of them is mentally competent to handle it, but they would make their own loans or they'd request it through me, and I have to make sure that there's a trustee that handles this then from then on? Or is there a way to transfer it into their name at some point? Or do they have to have their own trust at that? That's what I'm trying to figure out what I can do.
This will be a trust for their benefit that you manage as trustee, okay?
Okay.
So just like any other trust, you're going to have to name a successor trustee so something happens to you. So if Bob is not mentally capable of taking care of himself, then you have to name somebody else that is.
Okay. Okay, and the only other one for the other scenario, if it was to get to them, is there a way to get the money to them through the trust? So whether they borrow it or loan it or I open... Could they open a trust up, and can I transfer money from my trust into their trust? And is that a taxable event to do that?
Depending on how you set it up, if you do it initially to fund that trust initially, it's not a taxable event. Putting money into it later, maybe. If you partially share in as trustee of your own trust, they want to pay for Bob's bills, you can pay his medical bills. And that is not a taxable event. If you gave Bob the money personally, well, let's stop talking trust right now. If you gave Bob the money personally to pay those bills, that would be a taxable event to him. But if your trust paid those medical bills, that would not be a taxable event.
Okay, now I've got documentation here, and we went through this some years ago back when my cousin was in the nursing home, and she's at home now. And she's got the trust with you. I've got the documentation of it here. And I have her currency here. But what is the best way to get this currency that's at my house at this state into her trust? It put it into mine and then transferred into her trust?
Yes, that's what the pass-through account is for. And that's what I'm going to do, okay? I'm holding some currency that belongs to a friend of mine. I'm going to exchange hers along with mine. If I cannot put it into a brand new account, at the time, when I'm at the bank at the time of my initial exchange, I will ask for a pass-through account to later then pass that money from this pass-through and put it back directly into her trust. So that's what I'm planning on doing, exactly what you're talking about.
So, but if I did that, well, I need her Social Security and all of her personal ID.
No.
That's what's been my hang-up.
If you put it
if
you put it into an account that she has access to. Yes,
okay.
You will need all that information because it's just a bank account. Granted,
right.
A trust owns it, but she's still the signer. So you need to have, you know, her social. She will at some point have to go to the bank to set up that account or confirm that account.
Okay, but it's still, I could get it into that account for her to use, and it's not taxable as long as it goes from this trust to her trust, and then at that point the bank helps us figure out how she's going to get access to it.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Maybe there's light at the end of the tunnel.
All right. Thanks, Sharon. Okay.
Okay.
We are getting a little off course here, but we've still got half a dozen callers. So let's keep going for a little while.
Yeah, because we're answering a lot of questions.
Yeah, we are. Okay. Regina, are you back?
Me again, yes. I just wanted to say for the woman with special needs, I've worked with people with disabilities and special needs people. What I just want you to understand is just try and find out whatever state you're living in. Get the laws and everything, and just make sure that it is hidden, because at any point, if they find out that there is a flow of income coming to him or her, they could reinvestigate, and what they could do is decide to cancel his benefits. So just be really careful at what you do, and make sure you get something in writing from them, you know, whatever the laws are. Because I know of someone who is on who's special needs, and it was something as silly as he sold a piece of property that was actually in his mother's name, and I don't really know the whole story, but he was given money, and they reevaluated him getting services from the state. So just get the laws and all the information from the state so that you actually have a copy of it, so you know how to protect this person with special needs. But it really shouldn't be a problem. But if at one point where you haven't elected somebody, and Carol, I'm sorry, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong. If there's someone you want to elect at some point, to, I guess, take your part over at some point, then they would assume your responsibility as far as, I guess, the money flow to the special needs person. I don't know if it's a family member or a friend. So, you know, just as long as you have the state information, because I know that they took my friend, they reevaluated his case because they wanted to know where he was getting this money. And it was so simple as the state was paying for his oxygen, but yet an aunt decided to buy him an oxygen tank, and it raised a huge red flag. I'm just using that as an example. So I hope that helps her. You know, as best I can. This is just information that I know from, like, maybe the past 2 years. And I do live in New York, so I don't know, you know, where you live and if things are different.
Well, that's great information, Regina. I had not thought of that. That's great information.
Yeah. I try to help people as best I can, and usually I'm the helper. I guess that's my task in life.
Well, there you go.
But, you know, be very cautious. And, you know, like I said, I was in the investment industry years back, and I had actually tried to get a job with a bank. It was actually Bank of New York. I guess that's how far I'm going back. Bank of America or something. It was one of the banks. And it was actually, banks have trustees and custodians that upon our departure from this world that you can elect, obviously, for a custodial fee. They manage out your tasks of what you want in life. And Carol, you can correct me because I don't know if you guys are able to do that. But, you know, it was something that I thought about, since it's only me and Mom. At some point, we'll have to figure out who we're going to have carry on our tasks.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense. It makes a great deal of sense.
But that'll be a whole different conversation.
Yeah, you could appoint a successor trustee, but if you don't know anybody that's going to be up to that task, yeah, then a bank trustee would be the perfect person to do that kind of stuff.
Right, but then it has to be pre-allocated. Like, you know, you'd have to say $100,000 every year to St. Jude's Children Fund, and everything has to be pre-allocated and itemized out prior to our departure.
Yes, okay.
So, well, thank you so much.
Thanks for adding that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay. Ralph, do you have a question?
Hi, Carol. This is Ralph. I can agree with what Regina is saying about the special needs situation. The states are very sensitive and will take funds quickly away if there's any use of or giving of other funds to special needs situations. So I would be very careful with that whole situation. Just a short time ago, somebody was asking about the trust paying for life insurance for a trustee, and you said, yes, it will. I would like to expand on that a little bit. Are you saying that if I have a life insurance policy and I am a trustee of a trust, that I can use the payments, I can take the premium from my trust as a trust expense because I'm the trustee to pay my life insurance?
I believe so.
I can take the whole expense of a life insurance policy?
Just like when you're in a corporation and, you know, they have these key man policies and stuff like that. The shareholder, I mean, the board of directors of the corporation makes a decision that, yes, this company is going to pay for life insurance and health insurance for key members.
Okay.
With your trust, yeah.
So you would basically just list it in as a minutes in your paperwork that the trust has made a minutes that this is the case. Is that what you would do?
That's what I would do.
All right. Well, if that is the case, well, what about automobile insurance? And what about a room for rental of an office as a trustee? Would any of that count as well?
I wouldn't do automobile insurance because the trust is not going to own the automobile. But room, writing off a room for the trustee, I don't know, in this case.
Well, how...
I think it's going, you know... I think our whole tax situation is going to change. I do that right now, okay? I work out of my home. I write off my office.
Uh-huh. But as far as that is concerned, but I'm talking about taking the an expense item for the trust or taking money out from the trust as an expense to the trust because I'm the trustee.
You could do that, sure. You're going to be, you can get paid a salary. You can also get paid for an office space, whether it's your home or down the street,
And that would not be a taxable item. It would be an expense item from
the trust.
It
would be expense to the trust, yes.
Yes, and you're saying, now the life insurance is not owned by the trust, and yet we're going to take it as an expense item to the trust.
Actually, and this is in book four, there's a whole list of do's and don'ts about life insurance, and I think it was initially, when I got this, it was initially suggested that the trust does own the life insurance and makes the life insurance payments. But if I know that it's specifically in Book 4.
Okay. We'd have to look at that closely because that intrigued me when I heard him say that he was going to use his payment of his life insurance as a trustee out of the trust.
And
who's the beneficiary of your life insurance, sir?
What's that?
Who's the beneficiary of your life insurance?
Well, it wouldn't be the trust. It may not be the trust.
That's the whole key right there, I think, Carol.
Yeah, it should be the trust.
The beneficiary would have to be the trust?
Well, it could be, and then the trust could make a payment to who you want the beneficiary to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody doing that may have to take a good hard look at that before doing it.
Yeah, and
exactly.
That's something, you know, for an insurance specialist.
Exactly.
One of the things I recommend that we all need to get close to a CPA and close to a good insurance guy.
Okay. Just food for thought.
All right. Thanks, Ralph.
Okay.
Okay. Tamara, you're up again.
It's me again, Tamara.
Hi.
So, let's see. Regina already asked, and you answered about five other questions that I had, which is awesome. But I think you're talking about some sort of book that I guess has explanations on a trust.
You don't have it yet.
Okay. All right. That was my first question. Can I get it? And I'm sure it...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get it when I get the real trust from you,
right?
Okay, great. Then let me see. Just a quick question, because I guess I'll wait to read the book to answer some of these other questions, because I'm sure you've already answered it in the book. But the pass-through account, is it in any way associated with the mother lode, or is that an entirely separate account that has to have a separate trust?
The reason for the pass-through is so you can take money from the mother lode
exactly
and put it into a different trust.
Right.
So it's part of that account, but it's there so you can fund another trust.
Right. I understand that. But we ask the bank for that specifically, or do we just set up a second account and just name that for ourselves, you know, the pass-through account?
Well, that's what's interesting. We don't know how much time we're going to have when we get there.
Right.
I'm assuming that we are only going to be given the opportunity to open one account, or maybe different accounts for different currencies.
Right.
I'm sure they're going to let us do that. But I don't think, like, I've got half a dozen trusts. I don't think they're going to say, okay, you could open this trust, this account, this account, this account, because they've got too many people and they want to process them too quickly.
Yeah.
So my plan is to have pass-through so I can then fund these other trusts accounts when we all have more time.
Okay, so that's something that we can ask the bank to set up for us, and it will be
let's say you said you had ZIM, so obviously you're going to have a lot of money. So let's say you want to do several other things somewhere down the line. You said earlier you want to do maybe another 10 trusts. So let's just
absolutely. And I understand the concept of the pass-through account. I totally understand it. I just want to know, how do I set it up, I guess, initially, for the initial?
I think we just, like I said, I'm not an expert on pass-through accounts by any means, but I think we'll just tell the banker, okay, Mr. Banker, I do in the near future have other accounts I want to fund, so I would like to put X amount of dollars into a pass-through account now to be able to do that. Can you help me with that?
Okay, great.
And they'll say yes.
Yeah, and they'll say yes. I don't see that being an issue at all.
Awesome. Should I have a trust set up for that pass-through account?
Well, no, that's just it. The pass-through account holds it until you have a trust. Until you have the trust.
Got it. Totally got it. All right. Great.
And in a lot of cases, like you do not have these secondary trusts yet. In a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. Judy has some. I have some. So that, again, I've got half a dozen other trusts I want to fund. I'm going to put X amount of dollars into this pass-through account so I can fund those other trusts that are already in place.
Exactly.
Or in your case, you want to fund a trust that you are going to create.
I totally understand this now. Okay, thank you so much. That's
You're
great.
Welcome. You're
okay.
welcome.
Bye.
Okay, area code 510. I don't recognize that area code.
Okay, this is Harold. I'm a friend of James Hurd.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you today?
Good. Okay. One thing that I would like to do is I really would need to talk with you one-on-one. So if it would be possible if I could get your phone number, because I really would like to talk to you about something.
Okay. That would be great. Okay. I'm going to give my telephone number at the end of the call, but I'll give it to you now also. It's 425-820-8090, and I'm usually available from about 9 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Saturday.
Okay. All right, then. So you're going to give it again after? Okay.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask you, and maybe this question has already been asked because I tune in late. Now, when you set your trust up and you have your money in your trust, if you want to get a return on your money, I mean, how does that work? I mean, as far as like getting the money to work for you while it's in a trust.
So let's say the trust makes an investment into, say, Bitcoin, right? Or whatever.
Okay.
The trust makes an investment. The investment pays a dividend. The dividend is going to be paid to the trust. OK? Okay, because the trust is the one that made the investment.
Okay.
You personally, as I said, you can always take a salary, you can take a distribution, but that would be taxable to you.
Okay. I asked because I was wondering, you know, like if money starts coming out of the trust, I mean, that money starts to dwindle. So I was just wondering how you could actually keep a return on it so that you don't lose money like that if you have to pay out stuff or something like that. I guess I was looking at it like a bank account or some type of investment account that you could put your money in.
Yeah, well, the bulk of the money is already going to be there. You will earn interest on something.
Okay.
And that's going to continue to build it. Now, if the trust invests something, whatever is paid off from that investment goes back to the trust.
Oh, okay.
So you're not just out spending money you're not just seeing a dwindling bank account because you're still making money either on investments or just on interest.
Okay. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. And so I'll sit here and wait. That's the only question that I had.
Okay, thank you. And you can give me a call later, okay?
All right, thanks.
Thanks, bye. Oh, good morning, Una, or afternoon. How are you today?
Hello?
Hello, Una May. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I've had some changes in my life, and on one of my trusts, the investor passed. One of the investors passed.
Uh-huh.
And also, I was thinking of putting my son as a successor trustee.
Okay.
Now that he's 19 as well. How does that work?
Well, didn't we already, the investor that passed, we're talking about your husband?
Yeah, well, we didn't do any changes, yeah.
Oh, I thought we did that. Okay.
No, because I was thinking of putting the house into a trust, but then he passed, and then I just didn't even get to touch that.
Oh, okay. So
I'm looking at this, and he's also a one of the investors on the trust.
Yeah, so that means he had a certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And at the bottom of the certificate says the certificate becomes null and void upon the death of the holder.
Okay.
So we need to reissue his certificate to you or anyone else that you choose.
Okay. So go ahead and reissue that.
Yeah. And just write a minute that, you know, certificate holder number one, his name passed away in such and such a date. His 50 trust certificate units are being reissued to, and probably yourself.
Uh-huh.
As far as naming the 19-year-old as a successor trustee, 19 years old is awfully young for this kind of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, maybe you're not going to die for 20 years. In that case, he'll be 39. He should be able to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I would really think seriously about naming somebody that young.
Yeah, I see. I understand what you mean. Because I have another trust, and my daughter is. I was just trying to divide it up evenly so that because the other one has the mother load.
Oh, okay.
It was supposed to be for the mother load. I was thinking of having two mother loads, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know really what I should do just yet.
Yeah, you could do that if you choose to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So reissue the certificate, and because the signatures are there of the second investor, which was him.
And he died, so his certificate is null and void.
Uh-huh.
You have to reissue it.
Right. So on the pages that his signature is, you just let it stay as is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Okay. All right.
Alrighty?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
all
then.
Right.
And then I probably need to get another trust for the house. So.
Okay. Just let me know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Una. My goodness, Judy.
I know. It's been a wonderful question filled day. It's awesome.
It, Really? We're not even halfway through with our prepared things.
Right. And I'm looking at the prepared things, and I think we've gone through all the way up to we could start with 11, because we've answered many
yeah.
of these.
Well, there's a couple other things quickly.
Okay.
When we're
okay.
talking about getting money out, so and we've talked about borrowing, we've talked about taking a salary, you're getting a dividend. But we've also got tax-deductible expenses. You know, what about vacations and golf and
right.
club memberships? You know, as a trustee, you're charged with managing and growing your trust. I mean, it means you probably want to investigate business opportunities and relationships. You might want to go to Argentina. And, well, while you're there, why don't you look at some property? Pick up some business cards. Pick up some brochures.
Exactly.
And
good idea.
It becomes a business trip as well. So a lot of those expenses are tax deductible for the business trust. And as Ralph just mentioned, as our insurance payments, those are tax deductible to the trust. And if you wish to help others, and we dealt with this briefly, the business trust can pay for medical or educational bills without creating a tax. But you have to be aware of some other issues, like Regina just brought up, about changing their status as far as state benefits. So, I can't advise on that because I don't know.
Right.
And also, you can still give anybody up to $15,000 per year before any taxes are incurred.
That increased?
Yeah, it went up to from 14 to 15.
Oh, great. I didn't realize. I haven't seen that anywhere. Wow, I'm glad you mentioned that.
I just read it recently. So
oh,
regardless
wow.
of which method or combination of methods you choose, be sure to write minutes to support your actions. And you must be very diligent in keeping the business trust legal and in compliance. You know, you don't want to get in trouble because you forgot to write something down. I mean, it's certainly not as onerous as writing minutes for a corporation or even an LLC, but you do have to document what you do. Okay. So you're suggesting we go to number 11.
What do you think? It seems to kind of flow into what we're already talking about.
How about what happens to the business trust when I die?
All right. Awesome.
And we talked about this a little bit. We all do die at some point. The business trust, however, does not. It was created in contemplation of life and not dependent upon any special purpose. And when we create your trust, we ask that you name at least one successor trustee to take over when you pass. And some people will say, well, I don't know anybody. I'll do it later. Well, in 20-some years of doing this, later often never comes. So that's why I really insist you name a successor trustee to begin with. And if you choose to change that person down the line, you can. But if you pass away with no successor trustee, your trust is useless. Just remember that. If you pass away with nobody in line, your trust is useless. So it's very, very important to name a successor trustee. And as far as the life of the business trust, it has a limited life of 25 years, but can be renewed by a like term by future trustees. Okay, now we're at number 11.
Perfect. So how do I prevent people outside of my blood-related family from taking over the business trust at some point?
That's a good question because people do worry about that. You know, many people, and I know some of our callers in the past have told us some horror stories about.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I have one of my own.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah, many people are setting up their business trust as a way of creating generational wealth. So to be assured that what you put together does not get sidelined by in-laws and outlaws, we can add a bloodline clause, meaning future trustees must be of your bloodline to be proven by DNA tests. For instance, you can name your daughter as successor trustee, and she can name her son as successor to her, but she cannot name her husband. So it's always, you know, he can put in his 2 cents, but he has no management authority whatsoever.
Right.
That way it always stays within your bloodline. Exactly.
I love that part. I really like that part. So how do I make sure, well, if I want to, how do I make sure all my children are taken care of?
So as we just mentioned with Una, when you die, your trust certificate becomes, which is your personal property, becomes null and void. and your successor trustee usually reassigns your certificates to himself or herself. However, you may specify beforehand how you wish your certificates to be distributed. Let's say say that you've named your son as successor trustee, but you also want to make sure that your daughter gets taken care of, and your granddaughter, and your nephew. You want to make sure they get taken care of, but they don't have any management authority over the trust. So when you write your successor trustee minute, you say, as certificate holder number one, upon my death, I wish my certificates to be distributed in this manner. You know, tend to my son, tend to my daughter, however, until you get all 100 of them or all 50 of them. So that's how you take care of them. So anytime the trust makes a distribution to certificate holders, those people all get paid in a pro rata manner. So the trust is going to have a lot of money, and like anything else, you pay dividends, right?
Right.
So at the end of the year, the trust has made $100,000 in interest, and your son Tony decides, okay, I think we pay these people. So he takes 10 grand, your sister, your daughter takes 10 grand, whatever the amounts are, but that's how those other people are taken care of.
Okay, that's great. Excellent. So how do I prevent future trustees or certificate holders for pledging or hypothecating the assets of the trust?
Well, you know, unfortunately, there's always somebody
who
thinks he or she can benefit from something that is not theirs. And, oh, I know my grandee put me on her trust as a future trustee, so I'm just going to go pledge those assets right now. Well, they can't do that. We could just put a spendthrift clause in there to prevent anybody from being able to do that. So they cannot hypothecate or pledge anything that isn't theirs.
Excellent. Okay, here's a good one, Carol. Is this RV going to be a taxable event?
God, I wish I knew. I don't think anybody really has an answer to this question. Throughout the years, I've heard everything from not being a federally taxable event to 15 to 20%, short or long-term capital gains, excise tax taken off the top before you even see it. I read something today that from the TNT call, he talked about that. He doesn't have any more clue than we do. My take on this, and I've heard it from many, is be safe, be smart. Set aside 50% for taxes. If it's taxed, you're covered. If it's not, you've got a 50% bonus. There's going to be so much money there anyway. Why set yourself up to be in trouble?
Right.
Put 50% aside and say, okay, I'm not even going to think about that for another year, because by that time you'll know whether or not it's taxable. And if it's not, you get that much more.
Yeah, exactly.
There's also a question about it being taxed at the state level. And again, we don't know. That was also mentioned on this TNT thing. Well, most states do impose a state income tax. Seven do not. So we suggest you domicile your trust in one of those. We like Wyoming and can direct you to the box shop, which will provide you with a street address in Cheyenne. Even if you do live in a tax-free state, like I do here in Washington, I strongly suggest you obtain a mailbox in or near your community to further protect your anonymity. You don't want mail coming to your house. You don't even want anybody to know where you live. So protect your anonymity as far as you can. Set yourself up so you're not paying state taxes. I mean, if I can find whatever that was that he wrote, I'll send it out. But it was very important, very interesting about some woman was told she was not going to be taxed, and somebody else told her she was going to be within the same state. So something we just have to be prepared for.
Okay, awesome. Carol, I've heard you mention over some of these calls over the last several months that you're going to be retiring in 6 months after the RV. Where do we go for help after you've retired?
Well, one thing I mentioned earlier is a couple of things you want to do is engage the services of a good CPA and insurance agent.
Yeah, exactly.
You will no doubt use the services of wealth manager and advisor, and I'm sure we're going to be introduced to them at the time of our exchange.
I agree with you.
And as I said, you may not hit it off with that person. But that doesn't mean that you can't find somebody new, you know?
Yeah, ask the bank to get somebody else.
Yeah, or do some due diligence yourself. Start interviewing people. At that time, you will have some money. You'll know what you're talking about. It's not, I'm going to have money because I bought foreign currency. You know, they're not going to raise your eyebrows because you already have the money.
Right.
So we are going to need services of other people. There's no question about it. Most of us are not used to having this kind of money. And
exactly.
I mean, let's face it, most of it, if you have a trust, if you're listening to these calls, you probably have a lot of currency. We're all going to be, at the very least, multimillionaires. We're not used to that.
Right.
So you can't just say, oh, I'll go from $100,000 a year to $100 million. No, your brain doesn't work that way. So we're going to need all the help we can get. I really believe that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But Jim has, my partner Jim has interviewed a few CPAs who are not only denarians, but business trust holders as well. They have told us they can take all of our business, but they've also asked us not to publish their names until post-RP.
Okay, so that's a good thing. That's a great thing. Okay, so Carol, what other services or products should I have to complete my estate plan?
Well, estate planning is more than just taking care of the money. I mean, we always say, okay, I got to make sure this gets distributed this way and this way and blah, blah, blah. It's more than just the money. So we offer the triple play, which includes a pour-over will, which states that anything you own in your own name pours over into whichever business trust you designate. The triple play also includes the durable power of attorney, which allows the person you appoint to take care of business for you if you are unable or unavailable to do so. And very importantly, it also includes a health care directive, so you can be sure your wishes are known by your health care providers. I mean, you're not always able to convey your wishes. You may be in a coma, whatever. You can't tell anybody what you want. And this way, your spouse, your significant other, your children don't have to worry about what would mom want, what would dad want, because you've already told
right.
them. So it looks like we still have another question here. So let's go to that. Area code 941.
Hi there, Carol. It's Connie in sunny Florida. Ho, ho, ho.
Hi, Connie. How are you doing?
I wish it was sunny, but anyway, we're grateful. I just wanted to
clarify.
Can
you speak up a little bit or speak closer to the phone?
Sure, I am. But it's our phone.
Oh, okay.
Ralph had brought up something about the insurance, and I wanted to clarify that. Because I did have my insurance license, and he can have, you know, his wife or somebody as a beneficiary, and then he can even put his grandchildren underneath as beneficiaries. And Allianz Insurance is a AAA company. There's other AAAs out there, but the money from the trust is paying for that, and it is as an investment. So it would be wisdom for us to use insurance companies, which are usually very solid and haven't had, you know, bankruptcy problems and things like that, to invest part of our portfolio in a decent amount of coverage and get extended health care, which is also a write-off on your income tax, and a lot of them also offer umbrella policies to cover some of these other things. But then again, like you were saying about the car, you know, the car does need separate. And people who have not had good credit prior to this RV, I would wait to purchase a car or get the insurance because they will charge you less, which we, you know, may not have to be concerned about, but you'll get a better rate with the better credit rate on your insurance. And the other thing I wanted to back up a little, because I was at my tax accountant this week, and definitely, you know, we are, because of the trust that we already have set in place, taking a gift, and this has been $14,000 individually, and if your husband happens to be on the trust, you can, you know, double that amount. But Trump did just pass, and the new, you know, the new rulings have come out, and there's information on the internet on the new tax plan. And Anderson has been having weekly Wednesday night calls, which they're out of Nevada, educating people. And you can, you know, get the replay on last Wednesday night's call that Ron did. So I would, you know, highly recommend that you, you know, listen to some of these calls or read up on and take notes so that you'll, you know, it's great to have a wealth manager. But what we've been doing the last couple of years is get educated. And, you know, yes, some of us have to hear it over and over a couple times before, you know, the light bulb comes on. But in order to know what we're talking about with the wealth managers, we want to protect ourselves, be knowledgeable, so that we're not taken advantage of. That's awfully important, you know, to use wisdom and not completely depend on them and do a check. You know, do
I totally agree.
Let's see. So the gift, I think, pretty much, there was one other thing you talked about that I wanted to go, and now I'm not remembering what it is. But anyway, I think that we did an awesome job today in covering, you know, the things that everybody needed to be prepared and have a knowledge of.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I believe that the people that are on the call today should have more peace of mind with the information and play the call over again in case you missed something or didn't get complete clarity, you know, on it. Replay this call that Carol did today and Judy. Judy, thanks so much, dear, for being there.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always my pleasure. I love Carol and all you people. It's wonderful. I enjoy it.
Yes. It's been a blessing for all of us.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Very much. It's very sweet of you.
Well, I want to help everybody, like what Regina and the girls said. You know, we're trying to protect each other.
So that's
critically important right now. We want to be prepared.
Yep.
Thanks again, and you all have a beautiful weekend.
You do the same, and thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
It's sweet.
Yeah, that's very nice. Well, Judy, I think we've come to a close.
Okay, Dollface.
I'm going to let us sign off here. You know, our business trusts are still only $14.95. We do offer family discounts and referral fees. Turnaround time is generally less than a week right now, but obviously I expect that to be longer post-Irving. The triple play is $275 for a single and $350 for a couple. And let's see, and I look forward to working with you now and post RV. And I really do appreciate your time, especially today. My gosh, folks, it's been a little more than an hour and a half. Thanks for your time, your attendance, and attention. You know, our next call will be in 2 weeks, and I do hope to hear from you soon. So I'd like to thank you again, Judy, for chiming in here and.
Carol, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been great. And again, my name is Carol Worlius. My telephone number is 425-820-8090. My email is info@indicator.com. Hope to hear from you soon. Let's all have a wonderful week and go RV. Talk to you.
Go RV.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now, everybody.